Prabhupada says the second type of devotional friendship is to become a well-wisher of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you become a preacher, then you become the well-wisher of Krishna. And Krishna likes that very much. And you become very dear to him. So they're both in this category of well-wisher. Just see, I've got them around the wrong way, as they appear here. So anyway, I think you get the idea. As it appears on the board here, the second type. Although according to the book, as it's presented in the book, it's the first type. To actually have a friendly relationship with the Lord in person, that's pretty advanced. So this is referred to in the last paragraph. Sometimes it's found that a pure devotee lies down in the temple of the Lord in order to serve him as a confidential friend. So we don't do that. This is very intimate, personal relationship with Krishna. It's not just a matter of someone being lazy or something like that. But in the course of the very intimate interactions between the Lord and his pure devotee, who's in the mood of friendship, the pure devotee may lie down in the temple in front of the Lord as they're having some sort of interaction together. So Prabhupada says, such friendly behavior of a devotee may be accepted as raganuga or spontaneous. Although according to the regulative principles, no one can lie down in the temple. But a person who's on that level is beyond the rules and regulations. So if they're having some sort of interaction, meaning with the deity actually, speaking to the deity and some sort of pastime is going on between them, then he may lie down in the temple. But then it's not an aparad, it's part of spontaneous devotional service. Prabhupada, where does he say it? Prabhupada comments. Oh, no, it's the next one. Okay, so now, surrendering everything. Atma Nivedanam. So this is the last of the 9 processes. And as we mentioned, Atma Nivedanam, surrendering everything, and friendship are the 2 highest, most advanced of the 9 processes. So you can surrender your better write these down. There are different ways or levels on which you can surrender. One is you can surrender on the bodily level. You can surrender mentally, think of Krishna. And you can self-surrender. Surrender your identity, that I am Krishna's servant. That's who I am. That's my identity. I'm not this body. I'm Krishna's servant. So now, we've given you, I think, let's see. Oh, yes, we have. Oh, back on the, amongst these verses from chapters 9 and 11, the last one, regarding surrender. So these are the 6 principles of surrender given by Srila Rupa Goswami. So there's 6, if you want to become surrendered, what is surrender? So there are 6 parts to it, according to Rupa Goswami. And I hope you got this. Okay. So,
You accept things favorable. You reject things unfavorable for devotional service. This is very relevant for us, how we can learn how to surrender. We are convinced that Krishna will protect us. We accept Krishna as our guardian. And it says full self-surrender. The idea there is that you accept that your only business is to please Krishna, and then sixth, always meek and humble. Number three and four are a little similar, not the same. One is you're convinced Krishna will protect you. Another is you don't look anywhere else. You don't look anywhere else for protection, or you don't accept anyone else as being your master. So these are the six principles of surrender. And we'll also be asking you about this in our final test. So, right at the bottom of page 98, right at the bottom of this section, Prabhupada makes a comment, or Srila Rupa Goswami makes a comment about these two processes: devotional service in friendship and devotional service in self-surrender. Srila Rupa Goswami says that devotional service in friendship and devotional service in self-surrender are two difficult processes. Therefore, such relationships with the Lord can very rarely be seen. Only for the advanced devotees are these two processes easily executed. The purport is that it's very rare to see surrender mixed with the sincere ecstatic devotion or the mood of friendship. One must give himself completely to the will of the Lord. This then is related with, not the next one, not the one after, but on page 99, being a surrendered soul. You might well ask, Why make two subjects, surrendering everything and being a surrendered soul? So the basic idea, why there are two and not just one, is that surrendering everything, it means it includes the process of becoming surrendered, and being a surrendered soul means that you are already surrendered and now you're acting in that capacity. So surrendering means that you are going through the process of coming to the point. And therefore Prabhupada says that it's difficult, it's rarely seen. And of course, the basic elements in coming to the point of getting to the point of being surrendered is you have to cultivate these six things, which are described in this verse here. And this verse is also Madhyalila chapter 22, so it's Lord Chaitanya is speaking personally to Sanatana Goswami. Then the rest of these offering a favorite article. Just a very small point. One, there are two aspects to offering a favorite article. One is you offer an article which is favorite to you. The other is you offer something which is favorite to Krishna. So it's not a big point, but for what it's worth. So that basically brings us to the end of chapter 11. And I think we'll start with chapter 12 and 13. Chapter 12 is listing out the last of the 64 items. Chapter 13 is giving further elaboration on the five very important ones, which are actually listed out, in fact, in chapter 12. So chapter 13 is elaborating on some of the subjects in chapter 12, in other words. So the main thing that we're interested in here in chapter 12, and of course what chapter 13 is focusing on, is these five very important activities. Who could please tell us one of those? Anupam Prabhu, one of the five very important. Yes, very good. Bhaktin Charmaine, would you like to tell us another one of the five? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Very good, yes. You want to tell us another? Yes, Nam Kirtan, chanting the holy name. So that's three. Bhakti and Raki, would you like to tell us? Worshipping the deity, right. And there's one other. Deepak Ji, will you tell us? The fifth. Sadhu Sangha. Yeah, which includes that, but it really means association with devotees. Five potent forms of devotional service. Now, other than those five, of course, there are a few other items described here, but we're not going to go into them elaborately. I'll just make a little mention about, it's on page 103, performing devotional service in Kartik. Kartik Vrata or Damoda Vrata, I think we all know, we've all experienced that a little. So Krishna is being worshipped as Damoda, who had rope tied around his waist, Dama Udara. So it's Yashoda Damoda, that pastime. There's also Radha Damoda pastime. That means when Radha and Krishna were little children, then they got married. There was a mock marriage. Children sometimes do things like that, playing like adults. So Radha and Krishna were playing like adults, so they got married. In a game. So in that game, they were then tied together. This is there like a Vedic practice. I don't know if they do it these days. Do they do it these days? Husband and wife are tied together. Anyway, that's a Vedic practice. They have to stay like that, I think, for a week. just to get to know, you know, that they are like a unit now. So Radha and Krishna, they were tied together in this little mock marriage. So this is Radha Damoda. This is Radha Damoda, as opposed to Yashoda Damoda. And of course it's Yashoda Damoda who are in the Damoda Leela, which we're very familiar with from Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyway, this month is very dear to Krishna, Damoda. So Prabhupada explained, Prabhupada gave the example
Well, first of all, if you perform lots of devotional service, or any devotional service in Damodar, the month of Damodar, then you get, some say 10 times, some say 100, some say 1,000 times, of the benefit which you normally get. Prabhupada gave the example of a shopkeeper having a sale in order to attract new business, and just because he wants to, because he's the boss. If he wants to have a sale, he can. And when he has a sale, then you can get the same things which you normally get for the regular higher price. You get the same things for a lesser price. So in the same way, Krishna, because the month is very dear to him in his feature as Damodar, so he just decides, let me give some more mercy. And he can do that. Just like the shopkeeper, he can do that. He can sell the products for less if he decides he wants to. So Krishna is having a sale. So we should try and take advantage of that. Performing devotional service in the month of Kartik. Therefore, generally, devotees take some extra vow, chant extra rounds, do extra reading or chanting or preaching, or do extra service, sleep less, or like that, to try and maximize the benefit. So now that's actually, other than the 5 particularly important forms of devotional service, that's basically all I'm going to discuss from this chapter. And we can go over to chapter 13, which is a little more elaborately discussing these 5 potent forms of devotional service, which are actually briefly mentioned in chapter 12 already. So, now we did mention, although I don't think we've given the verse, although we don't, it's not terribly important. Oh, actually, wait, sorry. Just before we skip over to chapter 13, I want to refer to another one of these in chapter 12. Rendering service to devotees on page 102. As distinct from associating with devotees. So I just want to refer you, I'm not going to go into it elaborately, but I'll refer you to the back page of this sheet of verses you got today. The last 2 verses, Aradhananam Sarvesham, etc., and Yeme Bhakta Jana Parta. They're both quoted here on page 102. The first one, Aradhananam Sarvesham, is quoted in the first paragraph. My dear Parvati. Slightly different translation, but the message is the same. And then the second verse, Yeme Bhakta Jana Parta, is referred to right at the bottom of page 102. And again, it's a slightly different translation, but it's the same verse. My dear Parta, one who claims to be my devotee is not so. Only a person who claims to be the devotee of my devotee is actually my devotee. So the point is that rendering service to devotees is so valuable that it's more valuable than serving Krishna. In fact, Jiva Goswami, in I think Bhakti Sandarbha, one of the Sandarbhas, he says the most effective way, or he says that serving the devotees is a more effective way of developing love of God than trying to develop love of God. Quite a statement. Serving the devotees is a more effective way of developing love of God than trying to develop love of God. So therefore, surrendering to the spiritual master, serving the spiritual master, pleasing the spiritual master, and making his service one's life and soul, it is always the most important part of devotional service on any level, even the most elevated level. So that's a little bit on that item of devotional service, or that rule that we should render service to devotees. So now let's go on to chapter 13.
So in order to illustrate and like make very clear the fact that these five forms of devotional service are really exceptionally valuable, Srila Rupa Goswami has personally composed five verses. Unfortunately, the Sanskrit is not here. It would be nice to have it, but anyway, at least the translations are here. We have mentioned that if you perform any one or two, three, or all five of these special types of devotional service, if you do them even without faith, but as long as you do them without offenses, then very quickly you'll be elevated to the level of bhava, which is an extremely elevated level of pure devotional service. Most extraordinary level of pure devotional service. So in order to like dramatize and really give some impact to this concept, Rupa Goswami has personally composed these five verses, one illustrating each for each one of these five forms of devotional service. And the way he's done it is very clever. What he's done is that he has expressed it, he's making his point more or less in reverse. In other words, he's sort of taking the position of someone who is such a neophyte, someone who's really not very advanced, but through performing this form of any one of these forms of devotional service, they're now being elevated in the most astonishing way. And it's having, you know, that it's almost like having a somewhat bewildering effect on them. They're being elevated so powerfully that they're wondering what's going on. Like if you look at the bottom of page 109, where is it? About halfway down page 109, second paragraph. So this is the verse regarding how effective it is to do deity worship. Rupa Goswami has written the following verse. My dear friend, if you still have any desire to enjoy the company of your friends in this material world, then don't look upon Krishna, who's standing on the bank of Keshigat. He's known as Govinda and his eyes are very enchanting. He's playing upon his flute and on his head there's a peacock feather and his whole body is illuminated by the moonlight in the sky. So he's saying, you're on the material platform. So if you want to stay on it, don't worship the deity. Because if you worship the deity of Govinda or the deity of Krishna, if you worship the deity, then all your material attachments will be destroyed. And you'll just lose interest in all these things. So in this very clever way, he's expressing how potent deity worship is. Then, let's see. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, down at the bottom of page 109. So again, he is referring, my dear foolish friend, in other words, you are on the material platform. My dear foolish friend, I think you must have already heard some of Srimad Bhagavatam, and particularly the 10th canto. Because I think you must have heard some of these things because, he's not exactly saying it directly, but it's sort of intimated, it sort of follows that you have given up your fruit of activities, your economic development and liberation. Why are we assuming this? Because it would appear that this Rupa Goswami who's speaking to his friend is seeing the symptom that you're no longer interested in these things. Therefore, I'm assuming you must have heard Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the actual verse itself, in fact, I have the verses, but they don't appear in the book, and I didn't print them out. But in the verse itself, Rupa Goswami refers to Dharma,
arata and calm as being, he uses the word, shubhadan, which means glorious, and moksha as sukhamaya, delightful, full of sukha, full of happiness. So when he's saying, my dear foolish friend, the idea is that this person who he's speaking to, who has lost interest in these things, he normally thinks of these things as being very delightful and very glorious, but now he's lost interest in them. So therefore, Rupa Goswami is concluding, you must have heard Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, to become so detached is actually one of the symptoms of bhava. In a few days we'll be discussing the symptoms of bhava. There are direct symptoms like the emotional symptoms, and then there are indirect symptoms, which are not emotional at all, but they're very practical and down to earth. Does anyone know what is the first of these indirect symptoms of bhava? It's a very important one. Yes, exactly. That someone on the level of bhava will never waste a second. So there are nine, actually. That's the first one. So one of them is complete detachment. So the idea is that this person, his foolish friend, and the same friend he's referring to in the first verse regarding deity worship, they're actually manifesting, if not the emotional symptoms, but at least these indirect symptoms of bhava, in that they're so detached, or at least in this case, he's so detached, or in the case of seeing the deity, he's warning him, you will become detached. In other words, you will manifest the symptom of bhava if you see the deity. So the idea is that someone who's unqualified is being elevated to bhava through seeing the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, hearing it from bona fide devotees, that is the obviously also there. Then, associating with devotees. So we find the verse, where do we find the verse? Towards the bottom of page 110. Now, the way Prabhupada has translated it, it appears a little indirect. This, you see the verse? A devotee once said, it's very astonishing that since I've seen this personality of Godhead, who's washed by the tears of my eyes, that since I've seen him, there's shivering in my body. So Prabhupada says there in the same paragraph, the purport of this statement is that as soon as one contacts a pure devotee, then one will develop this mood of attraction to Krishna. It appears a little indirect, but actually it appears that the person themselves, they've seen Krishna, therefore they're now experiencing bhava, but Prabhupada's saying is that the idea is that they've met a devotee, and therefore they have now become engaged in the process of devotional service and come to the level of bhava. Actually, there are different ways of translating the Sanskrit itself. It can actually be translated to indicate that the person has seen a devotee who's manifesting these symptoms. But at least the idea Prabhupada is saying that the purport is that this person must have contacted a pure devotee. Anyway, then, the next one, chanting the holy names. The verse is at the bottom of page 110, going over to the top of page 111. So the same symptom is manifesting. This person who has heard Narada Muni chanting is becoming bereft of all attachments. In other words, they're coming to the level of bhava in the sense of becoming totally detached. So therefore, chanting the holy names. It's implied, he says, that it's like, I have heard it said that
I've heard it, so now I am experiencing the symptoms of bhava. And there's a verse, we gave you a verse in that regard, I think. Oh, actually, a verse, just to go back to associating with devotees. Sorry to jump around a little bit. Anyway, this verse here, you see at the top of the page, the front of this page, Tuliyama Lavenapi, that's stressing about association with devotees. Then the second verse, Nama Chintamani Krishnas, is these verses appear in the short descriptions in chapter 12, actually. It's glorifying the chanting of the names of Krishna. Then Vrindavan, residing in Mathura, residing in Vrindavan, or for that matter, residing in any holy place. Rupa Goswami writes, I remember, this is the top of page 111, I remember the Lord standing by the banks of the Yamuna River, so beautiful amid the Kadamba trees, where many birds are chirping in the gardens. And these impressions are always giving me transcendental realization of beauty and bliss. So, Prabhupada explains at the bottom of this paragraph, or I should say first, that in the verse itself, Jiva Goswami comments that when Rupa Goswami says that these impressions of remembering Vrindavan and the beautiful scenes in Vrindavan, that they're giving me transcendental realization of beauty and bliss, Jiva Goswami says, this means that the symptoms of bhava are awakening. And Prabhupada, at the bottom of the same paragraph, says, he's making the point that Mathura and Vrindavana are very transcendental. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any possibility of them invoking our transcendental sentiments. And such transcendental feelings are aroused immediately and without fail after one arrives in Mathura or Vrindavan. So we may get a stampede of devotees to Mathura and Vrindavan. But it's also referring to the temple where Krishna is. Wherever Radha and Krishna are, that is Vrindavan. What is it? Vrindavanam parijaja ekapadam na gacchati. Krishna says, I never take one step outside Vrindavan. So, upstairs, and actually this whole place, is Vrindavan. Our realization may be a little short, but actually that's a fact. So actually when people come to the temple, often it has an effect on them. Often it has. Something is aroused in their hearts. So then Prabhupada, after giving this description, of course now this one here, this verse, is not really so much in this like reverse mood of giving a warning, don't see the deity, or you're very foolish but I see you're now very detached, so you must have heard Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not working, he's not speaking in this reverse sense, it's just a very straightforward statement. So that's one point. But then Prabhupada goes on to say, in the next paragraph, the middle of page 111, in these statements about devotional service, sometimes it may appear that the results have been overestimated. Because you may have been to Vrindavan. How many of you have been to Vrindavan? Three. Okay. And I've been also. So we have been to Vrindavan. But we are not on the level of bhava. So therefore we might think that, you know, these statements must be overestimations. But actually there's no overestimation. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain that some devotees and revealed scriptures give evidence have had immediate results.
from these five activities, or any one or two or whatever of them. Although it's not possible for everyone, don't expect it. We all suddenly jump on the next plane to Vrindavan, and there we are, and we're not experiencing bhava. But we may be feeling that it's rather hot. Quite the opposite. The mosquitoes are a nuisance. The rickshaw wallahs may have just ripped us off. All these things are going on. So we may think, what is this Mathura Vrindavan gives bhava? It's giving me pain. But there are examples. For example, the four Kumars immediately became devotees simply by smelling the incense in the temple, which is part of deity worship. So this is not a sixth process that you smell the incense, but this is part of, this is related to the deity. And in a sense, it's also related to Mathura and Vrindavan because the temple is a holy place. So it applied there. And then also Bilva Mangal Thakur, a very unlikely candidate for bhava, or for like immediate or very quick elevation to bhava. He was actually quite degraded. But he heard about Krishna, gave up his beautiful girlfriend, poked out his eyes apparently, because he still had some sort of mundane attractions. I'm sure you know this story. And then he just went to Vrindavan. And as he entered Vrindavan, he was crying. He was overwhelmed. The symptoms of bhava were coming. And he went and sat down in one place, and Krishna came. And even though he couldn't see Krishna, but Krishna was personally relating with him every day. So he's an example of someone who was actually elevated to the level of bhava. Very, very quickly. When he came, particularly when he came to Vrindavan, actually. So these statements are not overestimations, nor are they stories. They're actual facts. But they're true for certain devotees and do not necessarily apply to all. Why not? Who could suggest why it might be that this idea of coming to the level of bhava just like that might not apply to everyone, although it does apply to some, even some unlikely cases like Bilva Mangal Thakur? I see. Well, yeah, but not exactly. We discussed this early in the course, that Krishna, he's watching us all. So even though these five processes can elevate you just like that, and the example which we was particularly given when we discussed it, is that there's a statement that if you chant the holy name of the Lord once, then you'll be freed from more sinful reactions or the effects of more sinful activities than you could possibly commit, even if you had eternity to commit sinful activities. So that statement is there, and these statements, these ideas are there, which we've discussed about. So why is it, if the holy name has that power to get free of all your anathas and all your everything unwanted, just like that, why doesn't it, apparently? So in Madhurya Kadamani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this. It's because the holy name, or the Lord himself, is feeling that your actual voluntary sense of surrender should really be aroused more before you're given this gift of bhava. So therefore he, even though you're chanting and chanting like we have been for so many years, chanting and chanting and doing all these things, doing all five of them, practically every day for years, but we're not on the level of bhava, it means that Krishna is watching us, and he is desiring, he's actually dealing with us, putting us in through different experiences, so that we develop more and more this mood of voluntary surrender.
But in some cases, like even Bilpa Mangal Thakur and the Four Khmers, neither of them were really so qualified. The Four Khmers weren't devotees. Bilpa Mangal Thakur was very sinful. But it appears that the Lord felt that they were in such a condition that he could just give them bhava, and it would be appropriate. Whereas in our cases, it wouldn't really be appropriate. So it will come, but when he feels that we are more qualified or that it's more appropriate. He wants to see that mood of real surrender and desire to serve Krishna aroused more strongly. So, any comments or questions on this? Well, the thing is that the statement about the holy name being able to eradicate anything if you chant it once, it means that it can also eradicate your offenses. It can eradicate anything if you just chant the holy name once. It can do it, but if Krishna feels that you're in such a state where you should develop more the mood of service, which includes getting free from your offenses also, but in a more voluntary way, then he may not allow the holy name, or the holy name is himself, so the holy name may just decide not to bestow upon you that which it can bestow, in order to encourage you to become more voluntarily surrendered and more voluntarily concerned about your offenses and like that. But actually the holy name can free you. It can deliver you from anything just if you chant it once, ultimately. There is no limit to it, the potency of the holy name. Because it's Krishna. And if Krishna decides he wants to do something, he'll do it, whatever the obstacles may appear to be. So anyway, even though we may have been doing these five things and we may not have experienced bhava yet, but still we should understand that of all the many devotional activities which we perform, we should concentrate on these because they will be most helpful in helping us. And it's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada, he sort of designed our program of Krishna consciousness in such a way that we are involved in these five activities practically more than anything. We have our morning program full of kirtan and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Then we're associating together in so many situations throughout the whole day. And the deities are there. And it's all there. All these five things are there. And they're really like the focal activities, the main activities we're performing. So this is Prabhupada's expertise, giving us access to these five special forms of devotional service for our benefit. So if we stick at them, then certainly the result will come by Krishna's mercy in time. Any other comment or question? Why are you not asking many questions? I'm sure it's not because I'm explaining things so nicely. It's not possible. I'm sure you're not unable to think of things to ask about. Anyway. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I think you were meant to write an assignment, right, over the weekend, chapter 14. Could you please hand that in? And we have some more verses for you. please can go out. Bhakta Vivian, amongst the men. Thanks. Thank you. Can you give those out amongst the ladies? For your homework tonight, we want you to please read and write a summary of chapters 15 and 16. Spontaneous devotional service and spontaneous devotion further described. These are, it's not so long, it's only about 10 or so pages. Of course, it's very deep subject matter, what we've been discussing so far. Of course, in many ways, it's also been, parts of it have been very deep, but this is deeper. These two chapters are the last two chapters in the section of Nectar of Devotion dealing with sadhana bhakti. Up till now, and including chapter 14, which we're going to discuss now, the subject has been Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. So 15 and 16 are spontaneous devotional service or Raganuga sadhana bhakti. So it's a deep subject matter and important subject matter to at least get some basic understanding of. So read it carefully. Read these two chapters carefully, 15 and 16, and do a summary. And we'll discuss them, or at least start discussing them tomorrow. I don't know if we'll get through them all in one day, but we'll see how far we get. So then if we get through 15 and 16 tomorrow, or at least partway through Wednesday, then we'll go on to 17 and 18, which are about bhava bhakti, and then chapter 19 on Thursday or Friday, which is about prema bhakti. And once we have completed that, then that's basically the end of the course, other than the final test, which you're all looking forward to, no doubt. Anyway, so that'll be, I would assume, early next week. I don't really expect to finish right through to prema bhakti before Thursday, before the end of Thursday, so we won't have the test on Friday. Earliest will be Monday, and maybe we'll set it for Tuesday, but we'll just see how we go. And we'll give you enough time. And maybe we'll spend one day just going over the points we're going to ask you about, telling you all the questions and all the answers. In this way, we're trying to serve you, help you. So, all right. So, just to begin, let us recite our invocation, first of all, to the six Goswamis. Nana Shastra Vachara Nai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Loka Nam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatano Ragujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis, and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shri Shad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. So to begin, I just want to do a little summary of what we discussed on Friday. Actually, one sort of new point.
Not exactly new, we've already referred to it a little bit, but I want to expand on to that, is how some of these items, some of these 64 items, are apparently duplicating each other in some cases. In some cases, they're actually duplicating each other, in fact. In other cases, they just appear to be, but actually they're referring to different aspects of related or different aspects of the same activity. So we already referred to a couple, like remembrance and meditation, you may recall. Different levels, basically, of the same practice. One is you're trying to remember and not forget. That's remembrance. Then meditation means you are remembering and your mind is fixed in that, so that is meditation. So there are other examples of apparent or even sometimes actual duplication. Wherever there may be actual duplication as such, which is not common, but there's, I think, just one case, or maybe a couple of cases. So where there is actual duplication, then this is basically just to stress some particularly important item. So one quite fairly noticeable example of apparent duplication is here. These items, these are all related to the holy places. So according to our acharyas, if you look in chapter 6 would be the easiest way to see what's going on. Number 7, where are we? Residing in a sacred place of pilgrimage like Dwaraka or Vrindavan, our acharyas say, this is number 7, our acharyas say that this refers to visiting the places of pilgrimage. Rather than really living there. You may visit, you may spend a little time there. So in that sense, you'll be residing, as opposed to actually being like a permanent resident and permanently fixed there. Then number 48, which in fact appears as number... Don't tell me we've got a different order here. Going to the temple, where's going to the... Visiting the temple. Oh, actually, it's number 28, sorry. Visiting a temple, which includes circumambulating Vrindavan. So I think that's sort of feeling self-evident, how that's different. It's number 8, in other words, of the second, or the longest list, beginning at the third list, in fact. Begins towards the bottom of page 54 and then goes on for a couple of pages. So then 55 and 64. 55, that will be number 35. One should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwaraka. You see that, number 35 on page 56, and number 64, or in other words, number 44 on page
56, one should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. So these are the same. These are not different from each other. And this is an example of some very important item being repeated for stress.
So then, Numbers 10, which is 10 in the very first list, and 53, which I assume must be
33. In the longer list on page 56, 33. So this is regarding trees, sacred trees. So number 10 says at the top of page 54, worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree. And naturally that includes Tulsi, because Tulsi is obviously a sacred tree. And then number 53, or it appears as number 33, on page 56. One should pour water on the Tulsi tree, which is one of the activities of worship of a holy tree, of a sacred tree. So the idea there is that number 10, according to our acharyas, refers to just having a generally respectful attitude, a generally respectful disposition towards the different types of sacred trees, like the banyan or the holy fig tree, which is a member of the banyan family, but not exactly the banyan that people know very well for extending out great distances. Whereas number 53 or number 33 on page 56 is referring to actually worshipping Tulsi. Specifically. There.
Numbers regarding chanting the holy names in different ways. 32, 34, and 63.
So they will appear. Let's see, 34. Actually, we should even say 32, 34. Actually, one could include 33 also. These all regarding chanting, glorifying the Lord in different ways. So, let's see, number 32 refers to singing songs, like bhajans, in other words, describing the Lord, describing his pastimes and qualities and so on. So 32, or in other words, on page 56, it's number 12, right at the top of page 56. One must sing. So that's specific songs detailing the glories of the Lord. Number 33, Sankirtan, refers to congregational chanting, of the Lord's names. 32 may refer to individually. One must sing, so you may do that individually. 33 refers to in congregation, a group of people, a group of devotees, chanting. And also not necessarily bhajan, but more kirtan, standing up like that. But it may also include singing songs. Actually, it means japa. In fact, if you were to look at where it appears in the chapters where these things are described, then you'll see if we can find it. Yeah. It appears on page 80.